The opening words today are from Albert Schweitzer. At times our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to thank with deep gratitude of all those who have lighted the flame within us. A litany of restoration. If, recognizing the interdependence of all life, we strive to build community, the strength we gather will be our salvation. If you are black and I am white, it will not matter. If you are female and I am male, it will not matter. If you are older and I am younger, it will not matter. If you are progressive and I am conservative, it will not matter. If you are straight and I am gay, it will not matter. If you are Christian and I am Jewish, it will not matter. If we join spirits as brothers and sisters, the pain of our aloneness will be lessened, and that does matter. In this spirit, we build a community and move towards restoration. Marjorie Bowens Wheatley.
This morning comes from a very small book, but a very wise book. It's called Parish Parables, and it's by a Universalist minister who many of you may have known. His name is Clinton Lee Scott. Now, this particular reading is written in a language that you may find quite archaic, but I do believe that within a couple of minutes you will catch on and you'll find it quite charming. So, the reading from Parish Parables. Now there was a certain man of affairs that did build for himself a large business and did join himself to clubs of many diverse kinds. Belonged he even to the wild asses that did dine together every seventh day and did sing after their own kind. And there was required of them a sacrifice of silver for an absence that was not forgiven. Belonged he likewise to the country club with wide and fallow fields, with a great house that maketh the temple of Solomon look like unto a corn crib. And unto these clubs and unto others did the man of affairs pay money without complaint, as often as was required of him. Belonged this man also to the temple that did give instruction in the faith of the fathers. And it came to pass that the man of affairs did receive a gentle message from the temple that it did greatly need a few shekels that the roof might be mended where the rain falleth upon the just and the unjust alike. Then did the man of affairs go into a rage as if possessed of seven devils, did tear his hair, and did rave exceedingly so that his blood pressure riseth upward. And he saith in his heart, not thinking aright, this is an abomination that the house of the Lord should render unto me an account. So ends the reading. It's so good to see you here today. I realize with the heavy rain and the marathon going on, it may have been a little difficult to get through. I guess there are marathons, half marathons, and I guess a few 100K or something. Maybe 10K is more like it. This sermon is about unmentionables, and it may cause some discomfort among some of you. Furthermore, if you prefer more spiritual sermons, this one may not seem all that spiritual, even though I consider the way I spend my money a very spiritual process. It involves my being aware of the strength of my financial choices, and it means that I must think very deeply about what matters to me in the world. It means that I have to consider my one small life and what I can do, what I can offer in the face of the enormity of the world's needs. And the way I spend my money involves my choice of sacrificial living, at least to some extent. For these and for other reasons, a sermon on the use of money can involve us spiritually as much as any other possible topic that you will hear from me. I want to talk with you about three words beginning with the letter P. The first of these unmentionable words beginning with the letter P is the word purpose. Purpose, not such a bad word, you think? I'm sure you've heard worse. But the problem with it arises when someone asks you, what is the purpose of fill in the blank? This happened to me one day not so long ago in a conversation with my Aunt Florence. She asked me simply, what is the purpose of the church? Well, at first I thought she was being cynical or maybe just kidding, but she was serious in her question. Apparently, the Anglican church that she attends had sent her a survey in which they asked all the members what their main interests were in that church, and that got her thinking about the purpose of the institution. And then she asked me, as one who deals with religion on a every day, really, and who should have a really clear and ready idea about its purpose. The operative word is should. Well, I hemmed and hawed for a while and started a sentence and stopped it and started another one. And then I came up with something like, for me, the purpose of the religious institution is to serve as a center and focus for the development of values and meaning. It supplies a tradition as a foundation, and it provides a forum where people can gather freely to consider the deepest issues of meaning and worth, and from where they can support one another in their spiritual growth. From the religious society, they go forth into the world to make the world a better place for all people. Well, that's what I came up with for my Aunt Florence. That's how I see the purpose of the religious institution, this congregation, or any other Unitarian Universalist society. I'd like to hear your ideas about the purpose of this institution. What is your congregation's reason for being? What do you hope it will accomplish in the world? What does the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin provide that would be missing if it were not here? These are difficult questions. These are mission questions. To some persons, unmentionable questions. But nevertheless, I challenge you to articulate your purpose as a congregation, and live up to your mission. Now, the next unmentionable word, beginning with P. In my last sermon with you of September, I talked with you about the concept of a congregational covenant. The definition of covenant, the formal definition, is, quote, the central unifying promise or commitment that binds a religious community together in voluntary loyalty. It grows from an affirmation of shared needs, values, purposes, and principles. As such, it is rooted in the past, in the tradition of the congregation, and reflects the embodiment of the promise through history. It is a promise made in the present with implications for the future. There, I used that P word 3 times. It is the unmentionable word promise. I mean the promise or commitment that we make to one another in this religious community, specifically on how we relate to and treat one another. Without a clear promise to ourselves, our standards of behavior together are implicit instead of explicit. It seems to me a critical task during this interim period that you come up with some words that you can agree with and then incorporate into your daily interactions with one another. And you've heard me say this before, and you will again. In the meantime, though, I want to offer you another example of a relational promise. This one was created by a board of another congregation and me in the context of the difficulties that they had experienced with their last called minister. And indeed, that's why I was hired to be their interim minister. I will read you the words that this particular board and I agreed to. At the beginning of each meeting, I would say to the board, I promise to listen to you carefully, respectfully, and mindfully for understanding. And the board would say back to me, we promise to listen to you carefully, respectfully, and mindfully for understanding. Then me, I promise to use the same care in speaking the truth. Board response. I promise to be open to and supportive of your leadership. Board response. I promise to encourage your self-care and to respect your boundaries. I promise to be clear about confidentiality. And I promise to speak directly about my own truth and encourage you to do the same. And the board finishes. And we promise to speak directly about our own truth and encourage you to do the same. By means of this spoken promise, this spoken covenant together, the board and I were explicit about how we treated each other, and we made a giant step toward healing. I am sure that a clear statement of promise, that second word beginning with P, will benefit this congregation as well. And the third unmentionable, and this one is really bad, really, really bad. This P word cannot be spoken from many pulpits. It is so bad that congregants have made it clear that they think it is the height, or I guess the depth of tackiness, for the minister to mention it. But I'll plunge ahead and say it anyway. It's the P word, pledging. Now, you knew that this was coming up sooner or later, didn't you? And you know the reason why. Because without financial support from each of you, expressed in your pledges to the congregation, the purpose and the promise of the congregation amount to nothing. It is pledging that keeps purpose and promise of liberal religion alive. Thus ends part one of Unmentionables, and now I'd like to call our president, Nell Newton, forward for the intermezzo. No, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, good. I'm going to try it out. Ooh, it is nice. I'm married to a wonderful man. His name is Monty Newton. He's not here right now, but he'll be here later. Each partner brings something to a marriage. Monty and I each brought 2 cats to our marriage. He also brought a house, which was very nice. I brought a church. Now, while he appreciated the fact that my church membership meant that our wedding here saved us a chunk of change, he didn't really feel the need to attend much. That's a real understatement. On the occasions that he'd come, he'd be growling in my ear, "I didn't come here to meet people." Generally, I would explain that Monty preferred to worship out in the backyard with a shovel in the garden. A few months into the marriage, Dacine Willman canvassed me at my house. Afterwards, I dutifully told my husband that I had pledged a whopping $120 to the church for the year. "You did what? Giving money to the church?" It was a concept so foreign, so absurd, so beyond his comprehension. I rattled off all of my newly learned statistics, and I finally said, "Look, it's just a part of being a grown-up member of a church, okay?" So I wrote the checks for that year. Most of the time. I wasn't always so good on the follow-through. Fast forward a few years. Now we have babies, and we have friends here, and Monty's found that there are ways that he can enjoy being around here when he's cleaning or digging or fixing something. And we've now more than doubled my original modest pledge. And church is now completely woven into our lives. And it's good. Sure, money's tight, but then when will it ever not be tight? We think it over, and we agree that we will start increasing our pledge by 10% each year. Monty writes the checks now, as he is much more reliable. Move ahead a few more years, and here we are at the present. The toddler is a teenager, and Monty is on the stewardship committee. He's canvassing people. He comes home to me, and he dutifully explains that Bill Edwards has canvassed him and that he's again increased our pledge by 10%, and he calmly rattles off the yearly total. Now it's my turn. "You what?" So when you get ready to pledge this year, go ahead, shock yourself with your own brave and brazen generosity. Thank you.
Thank you, Nell. That was wonderful. Now, where was I? As an extra attraction during this service, I will invite the board and the stewardship volunteers to show again their leadership and begin the stewardship campaign by stepping up here with their orders of service in hand. I want them to be recognized and appreciated for all the fine work that they have been doing for the congregation. Then we will speak together the responsive reading that is in your order of service. And for the next weeks of this month, we will continue the stewardship campaign. Now, many of you have already acknowledged that liberal religion means a great deal to you, and you are willing to give of your substance to keep it going. But some of you may be uncertain as to what is an appropriate amount to pledge. Well, now, each of you must make that determination for yourself, based on your own family circumstances. Let me tell you about the fair share concept and how it has guided me through the years. You might use this fair share concept when you are ready for one of the higher levels of giving. Fair share is a simple calculation and easy to remember. I have as my goal to give to the congregation I serve $1 per week per $1,000 of my annual income. And in a minute, I'll do the numbers. When I first became part of a Unitarian Universalist congregation, and that was the UU Church of Arlington, Virginia, I learned this formula when I was a canvasser. and I knew that there was no way that we could contribute that much. A dollar per week per $1,000 of annual income, that would be roughly 5% of our income. But during the 13 years that I was an active lay member there, I found that the goal was more and more accessible, almost within reach. So I'll illustrate with myself as an example. As you know, if you read the financial statements available on the bulletin board to all of you, the salary and housing combined that you pay me as your interim minister is $75,000 a year. Following my calculation, then, I should, and I do, pay at least $75 a week to this congregation for the operating budget. And I also contribute to other organizations that support my values and principles. When I first saw your financial statements, before I accepted the job, I noticed that you were underfunding your congregation, or had been doing so at least the last couple of years. Now, I believed that there were persons of generosity here, so I was curious about why this was happening. I wondered if perhaps the congregation were uncomfortable about speaking about money. So I made up my mind to take the opportunity every Sunday, in season and out, to speak of the privilege it is to support liberal religious values and principles with our financial support as well as in our daily lives. And I realized that I couldn't very well speak about this in such a way unless I supported the congregation at a level that would demonstrate my belief in you. So my commitment to this church for 2009-2010 is one that means I believe in you and in your role in liberal religion. My pledge for the operating budget for the 12 months that I am in your employ in the year 2009-2010 will be at the 6% plus level. I commit to giving $500 a month or $6,000 for the year 09-10. Now, the key words there are in your employ. I am lucky, so lucky that I am employed at the present time by you. And I recognize that not everyone is so fortunate. But since I do have a job now until the summertime, and I hope to have one for next year as well, I want to pitch in extra to lessen the burden on those of you who are now unemployed or underemployed. And I urge all of you who have an income to do the same. Those of us who are employed can do a bit more for the congregation these days. For me, Fair Share started out as a goal, 5% of my before-tax income, and through the years I worked toward it until finally I was able to meet it and now to surpass it. I hope that my experience with pledging helps you to evaluate yours. I truly believe that people feel better about themselves when they choose to contribute to an organization that upholds their values. For me, it's not give until it hurts, because I am not a masochist, but rather give until it feels good. And only you can make the determination of what feels good for you and your family. And I would add, not only feels good, but does good. Give until it does good. You may be secure in the knowledge that your pledge does good here at the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. Now there, that wasn't so terrible, was it? Three unmentionables all in one morning. The P word, purpose. I challenge you to think for yourself about the purpose of this religious body and to articulate it to others and live it in your lives. And the P word, promise. I challenge you to develop a promise of how you treat each other as a congregation so that your behavioral standards are known by all persons. And the P word, pledging. I challenge you to sit down with your family and determine what amount you can commit, whether or not it is yet your fair share, in order to do good in this congregation and in the world. As Anne Frank said, such an old soul she was, no one ever became poor by giving. May that be our theme of generosity now and always.
And the parting words this morning are from Theodore Parker. The IRA is a religion which, like sunshine, goes everywhere. Its temple, all space. Its shrine, the good heart. Its creed, all truth. Its ritual, works of love. Its profession of faith, divine living.